From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Let me be clear with everybody that school districts are potentially going to be held liable if they don't live up to the standard that is set by the CDC and by the state. And so school districts need to decide, are they going to, at this moment, are they going to potentially be subject to liability for not following those recommendations?
And serving on this committee, I'm here to investigate January 6th, not in spite of my membership in the Republican Party, but because of it. Not to win a political fight, but to learn the facts and defend our democracy.
Well, that's the GOP Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. The hearings into what happened on the 6th of January at the U.S. Capitol got underway this week. Also, what's going on with COVID numbers? We heard from the governor there talking about schools and some new guidance that's out from the CDC and Illinois Department of Public Health. It feels like deja vu all over again when it comes to COVID. We'll talk about that on State Week and more. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is on vacation this week. Our panel includes Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Statehouse editor. Also joining us, Chris Mooney, political science professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Chris, thanks for being with us again.
Thanks, Sean.
And Peter Medlin, he covers education for WNIJ Public Radio. And Peter, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Sean.
Well, let's start with these hearings into January 6th, the insurrection that occurred at the U.S. Capitol. These hearings now getting underway. Illinois' own Congressman Adam Kinzinger was added to the panel by the House Speaker, Democrat Nancy Pelosi, one of only two Republicans, the other being Liz Cheney, to be serving on that committee. Both have been outspoken critics of Donald Trump and their own party. Chris, what did you take away from the start of these hearings?
Well, they were very emotional, for one thing, and I think intentionally so. They brought out these four officers who had these traumatic experiences. They showed a lot of very, very disturbing tape, much of which we've seen. I don't know if we're getting inured of right-wing protesters beating cops over the head with flags. We saw a lot more of that. We saw and heard a lot of bad things. And both parties were represented on the panel, but clearly the establishment of the Republican Party and the vast majority of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives is doing everything they can to sort of stifle this investigation. The leader of the Republicans, Kevin McCarthy, appointed five members to this committee, two of whom denied that this, Trump lost and that this was anything more than, a tourist visit or something like that. And so in a kabuki dance, Pelosi rejects two of those people. And then McCarthy, in indignation, pulls the rest of them, including our own Rodney Davis, off the committee. And so what we're left with is these two, you gotta say courageous, Republicans, Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, two of the most conservative and hawkish Republicans in the House of Representatives, left on the committee at odds with their own party, because apparently the Republicans feel that too much information gets out, it's not going to be good for them. Just fraught with political tension, fraught with emotion. One thing I didn't like about it was that we went to commercial break and we're not going to be seeing anything more on this for a couple of months. But so I think that from a dramatic perspective, they've kind of lost a little momentum there. But it was quite a series of quite a testimony from these people.
Well, what we heard from Kinzinger there at the start of the show, saying he's on it not because he's a Republican, or not in spite of being a Republican, but because he is, he wants to get to the root of what really took place there. But politically, if we look at it from that point of view, Chris, is he pretty much done in the Republican Party at this point?
Well, I think both Kinzinger and Cheney are all in on the anti-Trump. Yes, he did lose. Yes, this was an insurrection. Yes, these are white supremacists. All those all those things that, we see in the media and, on the video and in the courts over and over again are truth. They are standing up and saying this is what went on. There's no way they can go back to the current party as constructed, the Trump party that exists today. What they're banking on, I suspect, two things going on here. Number one, I would like to think that they have personal integrity and that they're doing this because they think it's the right thing to do. And that's what they say. And given their records, I take them at their word. From the strategic point of view, what they're doing is they're all in. There's no way they're going back. They jumped off the cliff. The only thing they can hope for is that the sort of Trump, Svengali-like control he has over the Republican Party right now is going to fade, either fade with time or be exploded, perhaps with, something that comes up in the course of the next year or so, indictments or whatnot that might shake the hold that Trump has over the party. But barring that, you're right. They're not going to be elected in the Republican Party probably for almost anything, even though I will say, it's possible these two people could win their primaries and could win re-election. That is possible. But it does, it not in the current climate, I think. Things have to change a little bit, and they might.
Well, let's turn to Rodney Davis, because Hannah, his name keeps coming up as a potential challenger to J.B. Pritzker for governor. Rodney Davis, Central Illinois Republican congressman, he's not really made it clear what he's going to do going forward. Maybe he's waiting on this congressional remap so he can see what his district would look like. Getting put on this committee in the first place certainly would put him in the spotlight. He'd also earlier voted for a 9/11 style commission to take a look into what happened on January 6th. Where does he stand at this point? And is he probably, at least politically, maybe better off not being on this panel?
Right. So, Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader in the U.S. House, had appointed Rodney Davis had picked him for this commission, but then pulled him off, because they were upset that Nancy Pelosi was not going to appoint all of Kevin McCarthy's picks. And then, of course, we saw Adam Kinzinger get swapped out at the last minute. It's been really interesting to watch Rodney Davis's stance on this. Like you mentioned, he was one of a minority of House Republicans to vote for that commission. It is, of course, not going necessarily the same way that 9/11 style commission, was filled with non-elected officials, which I, so long ago now, I guess I sort of remember that. But anyway, it's been interesting because he was pulled off the commission, said it was too political. And then there was a fundraising email from Rodney Davis's campaign that was, it had some pretty extreme language about, he called those who were at the Capitol on January 6th patriots, which would be kind of a departure, especially from the testimony that we heard the other day. We heard one of the Capitol police officers who got a lot of attention. He was a Black Capitol police officer, had said before and, the other day that he was berated with racial slurs, was called the N-word when he was trying to hold off insurrectionists in the Capitol. And he said that after the Capitol was finally cleared, he was in the rotunda. Rodney Davis was there trying to, provide some comfort to these police officers. And he, quote unquote, gave the officer Dunn a big hug, to then 7 months later have a fundraising email that uses the verbiage of these patriots. Nancy Pelosi's trying to sully the name and make it all political. It's very interesting. I reached out to a former GOP operative. Turns out, those fundraising emails, like I suspected, are farmed out, but usually the campaign has final approval over them. And I reached out, but I did not receive an answer as to whether the campaign, signed off on that verbiage. But it's interesting. It is, because Rodney Davis, as we said on this program before, his name has been bandied about as a possible, challenger to Pritzker, when the final congressional maps are settled on, likely in September by the General Assembly. If Rodney Davis is pushed out of his district, or, you know, drawn into a district with someone like a Mary Miller, you know, he definitely is considering a run for governor, run for statewide office.
Yeah, Chris, just your thoughts on him. Yeah, Chris, your thoughts on Davis. You know, is he helped by not being part of this process now?
You know, it depends on what you mean by helped. And I mean, you know, one would like to think of our members of Congress as having, you know, principles on which they stand and work and goals that are based on public good and things like that. But many of them are, and I would say probably most of them to some extent are strategic animals, right? And they are trying to accomplish goals for themselves, right? They're trying to, and oftentimes it's to move up the political ladder, or maybe it's position himself for a lucrative lobbying job when they get out of office, or whatever it is. So they are human beings, and they do act strategically. Then, and I don't think that's probably a shock to most people listening to this. Now, Rodney Davis, the question is, okay, what's he think he's going to do, right? And exactly as Hannah said, I suspect that he is like a cat on a hot tin roof right now. He doesn't know which way to jump, right? Because it depends on how that map gets drawn. I don't think he can out-Trump Mary Miller. I don't think Trump could out-Trump Mary Miller. On the other hand, if he's going to run for Congress, he's going to probably have a piece of her district or some of those people. And certainly there's a lot of rabid pro-Trump people in that part of the world. And so he's got to now be prepared to run, you know, in that environment. On the other hand, if they really do, you know, if the Democrats in the state house really do carve him up a bad district, a district that he doesn't think he can win in, which they may or may not be able to do, then what's he going to do? And then the next step would obviously move from Congress. What do you do? Run for statewide office, right? That seems like the next move up, unless you're in the city of Chicago, you might run for mayor or something. But the problem with that is if he wants to get a statewide, win the statewide, he's got to run away from Trump. So if he wants to run for Congress, he's got to run toward Trump. He wants to run statewide, he's running away from Trump. What he's stuck with is exactly where he is right now, mealy mouthing in the middle, saying both things to different people, and, you know, hugging the cop on one hand and talking about these, you know, these traitors as being patriots on the other hand. And, you know, that there's no way that's going to win. He can never win. He's not going to win statewide with this kind of strategy. And whether that, you know, the Democrats are going to give him a district he can win in downstate, I guess it depends on, you know, what they feel like doing, I suppose, because they have the control of that.
We're hearing a lot of different viewpoints about what actually happened that day. And, you know, as we get farther away from it and look back on it, it's interesting to hear these different views. And let me bring Peter Medlin in. Peter, you cover education mostly, and you reported about how some teachers were trying to discuss this in classes. What did you find out from that reporting?
Yeah, I remember because this was around the time that students were pretty much all in most school districts learning remotely or in a blended version. So they didn't get as much of a chance to talk about it as maybe they'd like. But I remember talking to an administrator, an elementary school principal, who said that his first year teaching was in 2001. So right at the beginning of that school year was 9/11. And he said, this is the second time in my career that I felt like I needed to take minutes out of the day just to tell the kids in the class, like, everything's going to be okay. And so we had that, and then teachers were, you know, I had a couple of social studies teachers that I talked to were like, hey, I was luckily teaching a unit on the Civil War, and the students were really struck that people were able just to walk into the Capitol yesterday, you know, on January 6th with the Confederate flag, but that never happened during the Civil War. And honestly, the thing that probably stuck out to me and has stuck with me most since that is talking to a student after that day who had you know, been in one of those social studies classes that was not surprised by the events and essentially said he feels like people in his generation, that younger people, are just going to have, like, that they're going to see political violence like this more often in the United States. It's going to be a more regular thing, which is kind of a horrifying thing to hear a teenager say.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Hannah Meisel, WNIJ's Peter Medlin, and Professor Chris Mooney. Hannah, let me switch gears here, turn attention to COVID. I was thinking about this earlier. I feel like a reporter, one of those weather reporters on the beach waiting for a hurricane. You've been watching for weeks now and seeing these numbers start to come back a bit with this Delta variant. Here we are now, a transmission that seems to be going up, and especially in certain places of the state and across the country. And the state now requiring masks again in state buildings. Other places are urging masks for unvaccinated people. The summer started with a lot of optimism, but Hannah, that seems to be fading now.
Yeah, it sure is. We're all so eager to put the pandemic behind us, but the pandemic is not done with us. It really does seem that this Delta variant is taking hold. We've definitely seen the effects on the western part of the state because it has taken such hold in Missouri, and obviously transfers over borders. And we've seen parts of the state like the Metro East and Southern Illinois, you know, if we were still under Governor Pritzker's, so-called phase four of his economic reopening plan, those areas of the state would be put back under mitigations. The governor's office is unwilling to do that now. No one wants to step backward. And honestly, it would be a very, very tough political decision. I will say right now, we have evidence that there are more cases and more hospitalizations. And of course, it's largely a pandemic of the unvaccinated, though we are seeing more breakthrough cases than we thought we would see, unfortunately. But we are not necessarily seeing more deaths. So it's obviously that's the ultimate lagging indicator, and people could be sick anywhere from a few days to a few weeks to it could sometimes I've seen stories about folks being sick for up to 5 weeks before they ultimately succumb. So we're not seeing necessarily a rise in deaths yet. So it's yet to be seen, you know, what difference vaccinations make on those death numbers. But of course, that's not all that matters. Folks can get COVID and be sick for a really long time, never get over it. There are folks who have this long haul COVID. Their immune systems could be significantly weakened. Their bodies could be physically weakened. There's a lot to consider. And so, but with school coming up in the next few weeks, honestly, a lot of my teacher friends are going back to school already to get their classrooms prepped for 2 weeks from now. And, we've already seen districts come out and make decisions that they're going to go mask optional. But now with this new CDC guidance that came out this week that encourages masks, you know, even in vaccinated individuals indoors, it'll be interesting to see if any districts, actually reverse that. I'm sure parents will be outraged, the folks who were outraged all along, but we've seen at all levels, and it's not necessarily any one person's fault, but we just see a repeated mismanaging of message, miscommunication. Science communication to the public is very difficult. It assumes that folks all have the same level of base knowledge, and we're seeing that that's just not true.
Yeah, Peter, talking about schools, if you could expand on that as well, because this really has been one of the big debates when it comes to masking, is whether or not not just the kids coming back, but also the teachers, the staff. What's school going to look like when it starts here in a few weeks?
Well, I think this is, even though we've been kind of staring down the barrel of this Delta variant for the last couple of weeks, seeing case counts start to go up, this is around the time when a lot of schools were going to, release what their plans were for back to school. And many of them, all the way up until now, were feeling good to go with mask optional. And, I talked to an administrator yesterday who said that he just released his plan and it didn't even make 24 hours before the new CDC guidelines came out. And so now it feels like a lot of them are kind of in a holding pattern in terms of thinking, okay, we need to take another couple of days and reformulate this, maybe wait and see what other school districts are going to do. Maybe there's going to be, you know, a whole cascade of other districts that go ahead and mandate masks. I know a lot of those school districts also, as Hannah mentioned, have really vocal parents in their community that really don't want schools to reverse mask optional options. And, you know, then again, you also have school districts and parents around our communities that are doing the opposite and are rallying for schools to reverse this. So they do go, you know, have a mask mandate for students. And honestly, I think a lot of them, this holding pattern that they're in right now, where they're saying, I'm not exactly sure what this is going to look like going forward, are waiting for other school districts or waiting for the governor to step in, which is also something that a lot of parents are asking for, and maybe seeing if there will be a statewide mask mandate in schools.
And we're also seeing a lot of different messaging, Peter, from when it comes to higher education as well. Different campuses. You're based up at Northern Illinois University. A little bit different messaging there and different protocols than what maybe some other places have.
Right. Like Northern Illinois University has mandated vaccines for students this fall if they're going to be living on campus and taking in-person courses. But it's not mandated for staff. And those staff that are unvaccinated are then going to be after wearing masks indoors. They're going to have to be doing weekly surveillance testing. And like you said, like that's not the case at every university. I think that the University of Illinois system has mandated vaccines, but you know, others like Southern, Eastern, and I think Sean maybe said Illinois State, that those ones have not mandated vaccines yet. And then, you know, if you're gonna look at other portions of higher ed like community colleges, you know, none of them have mandated vaccines. And obviously there's different situations where, you know, they don't have, you know, large dorm rooms of people living there, but you have seen some that have mandated, you know, masking around their campuses. And I talked to the executive director of the community college board, who said that about half of the schools right now, about half of the community colleges in the state have contracts for Shield Illinois, you know, saliva COVID testing. And he was saying that he expects that to go up and to see even more schools try to work that out before the school year starts. And which, again, as we keep mentioning, is about now. It's coming up in the next couple weeks, the next few weeks, people are going to be returning. So as much as we think that this is still the summer, the school year is here, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, let me go back to something Hannah mentioned, and Chris, I'll ask you about this. She mentioned the fact of the messaging that's out there. And, you know, here we are talking, and we've been talking about this for well over a year, that the most important thing is that kids can be in school, you know, get kids into a way that they can learn the best. And yet I see things like Chicago allowing the Lollapalooza concert to go on when, you know, everybody else is talking right now about hunkering down again and trying to protect yourself in the ways possible. Is that a mixed message that's being sent to the public?
Yes, I think it's clearly a mixed message. We've been mixed messages throughout this, especially if you look at it over time, the scientists, the politicians, mixing the messages. But the reason they're mixing the messages is because we're dealing with, I mean, there's a couple of reasons. One of them is because there are different perspectives on this, and some people want different things to happen, right? Some people are more concerned about the health problem and the deaths, and some are more concerned about the economy opening up or personal freedom or some other things like that. So there's going to be that. But it's also the case that this is a new physical process that the scientists are just trying to understand. And so they are learning in real time. And so things are changing in real time. People's behavior is causing it to change in real time. We didn't have to have this resurgence. If we would have had, you know, if people were eligible, would have got the stupid shot, we wouldn't be having this right now. And we would be back to normal, but that's not what happened. And so, so if anybody thinks that there's supposed to be one thing coming down from on high that's going to tell everybody how to work this thing forever, every single day, it's not going to happen because things are changing. So we're all going to have to be a little flexible. Because otherwise, in, 5 years from now, we're going to say stuff that we're going to regret.
And just about a minute to go here, Hannah, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I think a lot of people think, well, everybody's going to come together like Chris was just talking. Maybe everybody will come together and we'll all get on the same page and get this thing moving. But you've got an election both at the state level coming up next year and, of course, a lot of different places across the country, federal offices as well. It's already starting out, at least, that we're going to get a lot of this mixed response about whether vaccines are a good thing to have, whether masking is proper, things of that nature. We're seeing that play out already in the Illinois governor's race in the early stages.
Right. In the three-way race that, of course, like we mentioned, more folks like perhaps Rodney Davis might join. Two of the three declared Republican candidates, Darren Bailey and Gary Rabine, are kind of embracing, kind of courting the anti-vaxxer crowd, both saying that it should be a choice, Gary Rabine going further and falsely claiming that people are dying of vaccines. Really, a lot of the dynamic that exists and people play their roles. But anyway, about why things get politicized. But of course, unfortunately, in the year of our Lord 2021, vaccines are, of course, politicized.
What next are we going to start questioning? Gravity? It is a theory.
Let's go to our notes from the field. And Peter, let's start with you.
Can I change the subject a little dramatically really quick to take us to something else? The Olympics, which I actually just wanted to mention. I just got to do a story that was really fun that was about one of the first-time Olympians from Illinois is a member of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team. Her name is Casey Krueger. She's from Naperville, Illinois. She plays for the Chicago Red Stars in the National Women's Soccer League. She's a first-time Olympian and got to chat with some of her old coaches about her Illinois roots and record-breaking time at Naperville Central High School and some of the people on the team right now about what it means to have someone on the most famous soccer team in the world try to bring gold back.
All right, Chris.
Yeah, as Sean mentioned, it's that time of year again, and Lollapalooza has arrived this weekend in Chicago. It's that four-day-long massive outdoor concert where hundreds of thousands of white suburban teens converge on Grant Park for 4 days of sun music, over-drinking, and the coronavirus. It doesn't seem like a good time, but they're going to have a good time on the way. So Miley Cyrus, Marshmello, and my favorites, the Black Pumas, will be appearing as long with Pritzker and Lightfoot, who attended on Thursday to show, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. We're all back to normal here. Proof of vaccine or negative test is required. And of the sort of 100,000 people that showed up on Thursday, 600 were turned away. So mask, vax up, and rock on.
All right. And Hannah.
The governor signed a handful of higher profile bills this week. And usually with those higher profile bills come with a signing ceremony where all of the sponsors and advocates and folks who are affected, they gather for a photo op. But curiously, the governor did not do a signing ceremony for one of the most major bills this session, which was the creation of a Chicago elected school board. No signing ceremony. I know that the lawmakers behind that bill were pretty miffed because it, to them, they feel like it's ignoring years of effort.
All right. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Hannah Meisel, Professor Chris Mooney, and Peter Medlin with WNIJ. You can get a podcast of our show through the NPR One app, also at nprillinois.org and through iTunes. And you can join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.